Nation alive. Yeah. Alive. Claro. WBAI. Claro. No
justice. This is listener-sponsored, locally controlled WBAI New York.
Stay tuned for Radio Extinction coming up. It's 6:30 p.m. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
Welcome to Extinction Rebellion Radio with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. And Extinction Rebellion is an international movement that uses nonviolent direct action to persuade governments to act justly on the climate and ecological emergency. Stephen Donziger is an attorney best known for winning a landmark case against Chevron for massive pollution in Ecuador and for what happened to him in the aftermath. Stephen, thank you for joining us today.
Great to be here.
Before we ask the first question, listeners should prepare themselves for really what's an extraordinary story that appears to be a scandalous abuse of the legal system. You're going to think that this can't be true. This could never happen in the United States. However, it's all documented in the legal record. Mainstream and reputable news outlets around the world have reported this story. 55 Nobel laureates have written in support of our guest. And what you're going to hear is not a Franz Kafka novel. It's reality. Stephen, perhaps we should start at the beginning. What was Texaco Corporation, now owned by Chevron, doing in Ecuador?
Well, it's good to be here. Texaco went into Ecuador in the 1960s, and they built a system of hundreds of wells, oil wells, in a 1,500 square mile area of rainforest. And they engaged in very substandard production methods. That is, they designed a system really to pollute. And over the course of about 25 years, they systematically and deliberately dumped billions of gallons of cancer-causing oil waste into the rainforest under the lands of the various indigenous groups. Five indigenous groups lived in this region. The environment was devastated. The indigenous peoples had their cultures decimated. Many were forced to move deep into the forest to get away from the oil production sites. And Texaco treated the people with utter abuse. And the legacy of this, and this went on between 1964 and 1992, the year Texaco, now Chevron, left Ecuador, the legacy remains to this day. It's actually even worse now. It's never been cleaned up. It's really a mass industrial poisoning of a pristine ecosystem that has killed thousands of people with cancer and decimated indigenous groups. To me, it's one of the world's great crimes, industrial crimes. And you know, people need to pay attention because people are dying, and there's an American company now named Chevron that is trying to get away with it.
It sounds very much like environmental colonialism, which is, of course, tied to the broader issue of colonialism that Chevron and other oil companies have participated in for decades.
Thousands of indigenous Amazonians brought a legal case against Chevron/Texaco. You were their lawyer. It went up to the Supreme Court of Ecuador. What happened?
Well, the communities in Ecuador won the case. I was one of the lawyers. There were several lawyers in Ecuador and the United States and other countries. The case was held in Ecuador at Chevron's request. Chevron did not want the case in the United States when it was first filed there in 1993, and they thought they could just engineer a dismissal in Ecuador. But they lost. The trial lasted 8 years. There was massive scientific evidence proving Chevron's pollution. The judgment against Chevron was affirmed on appeal by three different appellate courts in Ecuador, as well as the Supreme Courts of Ecuador and Canada for enforcement purposes. Chevron consistently refused to pay. They threatened the indigenous peoples with a lifetime of litigation unless they dropped the case. And, you know, Chevron has since the judgment came down in 2011 and it was affirmed on appeal in 2013. They haven't paid a penny. And they've sort of mocked the indigenous people, saying, we're going to threaten you with a lifetime of litigation unless you just drop the case that they won in court. So, you know, I've learned that Chevron only complies with court decisions when they win, when they, in this case, lose to indigenous peoples and rural farmer communities. They just think they don't have to pay. Then they challenge the communities to chase them around the world to get their assets, which is what the Ecuadorians are now in the process of doing.
So they they got their preferred legal setting. Chevron got it. They wanted it in Ecuador rather than in New York. They got it and they still lost. And they lost big. $18 billion, I've read, was the initial penalty. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was later cut in half to $9.5 billion, but it was a significant judgment.
9.5 or 18 billion. I mean, obviously 18 billion is a lot more. 9.5 billion is huge. If you are Chevron, you do not want to pay that kind of penalty. And as you just said, they have not paid one penny of it so far. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. What they have paid is literally $1 to $2 billion to law firms. They've used 60 law firms and 2,000 lawyers. So rather than take that money and deal with the problem and comply with the rule of law, comply with the court judgment, they refuse to pay the court judgment, take the money and pay these powerhouse corporate law firms in the United States, like Gibson, Dunn and Crutcher being an example, to attack me and attack those of us who worked on the case, attack us personally with lawsuits. You know, these are slap lawsuits, lawsuits designed to intimidate, silence advocacy. And, you know, they've been targeting me with a slap lawsuit here in New York for years. Rather than take that same money it's cost to do this, I think, completely unethical lawsuit and pay the judgment that's owed to the people of Ecuador so they can clean up their environment, they can stop dying from exposures to toxic oil waste.
So let's break down what has happened to you. How did you come to be facing U.S. federal judge Lewis Kaplan and what went down?
So what happened was after we won the case in Ecuador, Chevron sued me in the United States on the theory that we had tried to use the case to extort money from them, even though it had been affirmed by multiple courts in Ecuador and Canada. I mean, it was a bogus theory, but they used it to attack me and they steered it to Judge Kaplan, who's a former tobacco lawyer. He denied me a jury. He let Chevron pay a witness $2 million, coach him for 53 days. The witness, Alberto Guerra, came in court, claimed I had been in a meeting where a bribe was offered to an Ecuadorian judge. This was like their big story to shift the narrative. Totally false. The witness later admitted he had lied repeatedly in court. Nevertheless, without a jury, Judge Kaplan, the former tobacco lawyer, credited this man's testimony and found that I had been involved in a plot to obtain the Ecuadorian judgment by fraud. And it's not true. And again, I repeat, the judgment has been affirmed by 29 different appellate judges in Ecuador and Canada. The only judge who's found a fraud occurred is Judge Kaplan. But Judge Kaplan was very biased against me. Anyone who observed the trial can verify that. You can understand that by reading the record. And Judge Kaplan also would not look at any of the environmental evidence that the Ecuadorian courts used to find Chevron liable. He refused to look at the case record in Ecuador. He refused to let me testify, tell my story. Again, he denied me a jury and he ran the case as if he was reverse engineering the outcome. So, you know, we don't consider his finding, and this is a civil case, to really stack up compared to the more legitimate findings of the courts of Ecuador and Canada that really looked at all the evidence. So as a result of this decision against me, which was designed to disable my advocacy, designed by Chevron and I believe Judge Kaplan, Judge Kaplan imposed cost orders on me. He basically ordered me, a human rights lawyer, to pay Chevron's legal fees, which are millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. And I don't have that kind of money.
And you just have it lying around?
No. They actually took what little money I did have out of my bank accounts and they wiped me out. I live with my wife and 14-year-old son. So, you know, my wife earns an income and, you know, we have support from people from my legal defense fund. But I haven't earned a penny in 2 years because I've been locked up. So what ended up happening is Chevron demanded access to my computer and cell phone on the theory that they were looking for my money. And that was all confidential information protected by attorney-client privilege, among other privileges. In any event, I appealed that order from Judge Kaplan. And while it was on appeal, he charged me with criminal contempt of court, which is a misdemeanor. And he assigned it to a Chevron-linked judge, a good friend of his. He appointed, I'm not being prosecuted by the government, I'm being prosecuted by a private law firm that has Chevron as a client. The firm is called Seward and Kissel. And they locked me up in my home for the last 626 days on a misdemeanor where the maximum sentence ever imposed on a lawyer convicted, and I haven't been convicted of anything, but the maximum sentence ever imposed is 90 days of home confinement, which I've been now, God, I've lost track. It's like 7 or 8 times longer than that maximum sentence ever imposed is what I've already served prior to trial, living in my home with an ankle bracelet. And I'll just make one more point. I'm the only person in the United States of America facing a misdemeanor in the federal system who has served even one day prior to trial under arrest, imprisoned in his or her home or prison. And again, it's been over 600 days. So there's something very peculiar. I'm being prosecuted by Chevron Law Firm. Judge Kaplan has investments in Chevron. You can look at his financial disclosure form. Judge Preska, the judge he appointed, is a leader of the Federalist Society. Chevron's a major donor. I'm surrounded by Chevron-linked people acting in the name of the government, trying to bring me down. And I will say this as a final point, and this is the ultimate grifting story of Chevron. You know, Chevron is a company like many big fossil fuel companies. They drill, they privatize the profits, socialize the pollution, you know, so take out the money, leave the pollution, let the vulnerable communities that live in the areas pick up the tab for cleaning up their own land while they run off. In this case, the Chevron prosecutor, her name's Rita Glavin, has been billing taxpayers out of a court fund over $500,000 to prosecute me in a misdemeanor. And that's after the U.S. Attorney's Office, this is a key fact, refused to prosecute me, claiming they didn't have the resources. Kaplan first went to them and they turned down the case, which allowed him to appoint this private prosecutor. But he appointed a totally conflicted lawyer who has financial ties to Chevron. So, you know, this is the first corporate criminal prosecution in American history. I'm convinced of that. And let me say, I know there's major problems with our criminal justice system in the United States, police racism being an obvious one. I know there are people who have had much worse outcomes than me from this system. But what's happening to me is a new kind of animal in our criminal justice system. I've never seen it before. You know, this is a corporate attack, a corporate takeover directly of a criminal prosecution. That's never happened before.
You're listening to WBAI's Extinction Rebellion Radio with Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane. We're in conversation with Stephen Donziger, who is talking about his landmark case against Chevron for massive pollution in Ecuador and about what happened to him as a result.
You are currently under house arrest. You're speaking to us from home where you're confined, up to 626 days and counting. Is that right?
That's correct.
You're wearing an ankle bracelet. You're not allowed to leave home. And it's been this incredibly long, I mean, 626 days, folks, that's almost coming up on 2 years. Was it 1 year and 8 months, 1 year and 9 months? Now, you've had your bank accounts raided, like forcibly money was taken out of your bank accounts. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, you know, yes. So all of that's correct. Can I comment real quick?
Please.
So, you know, what's happening to me is eerily similar, honestly, to what Vladimir Putin does to his political opponents in Russia. They have this formula. You're seeing it with Navalny now, you know, the dissident in Russia, where you basically accuse people of crimes falsely, you know, put them in jail, file civil lawsuits, make stuff up, take their money. And you can just destroy a person by weaponizing the legal system. It's called lawfare. You see this in a lot of countries these days, you know, where governments use it to bring down political opponents. Look, we just went through 4 years of a president who, you know, we had a true autocrat, a wannabe dictator running this country, willing to use all the tools of power at his disposal to serve his own personal interests, right? So Chevron is coming out of that tradition. I mean, I think the Trump era enabled, you know, created an environment where those involved actually felt they could do this and get away with it. Now it's different now. We have a different administration, but like that train has left the station and it's like off and running on the tracks and it's very hard to stop. By the way, we are demanding the Department of Justice step in and take this case out of the hands of the Chevron prosecutor and prosecute me directly. I'm probably the only lawyer in America who is begging to be prosecuted by the Department of Justice. You know, because once they take it, remember, they declined the case.
Yeah.
But once they take it back, they can then treat me like a normal, like every other similarly situated person, which they'll probably just drop the charges because no one's ever been charged with criminal contempt for what I did, which was to challenge a civil discovery order. And no one's been locked up, you know, prior to trial. So right now, you know, I have a trial, non-jury trial. If it happens, I will be convicted. It's not a trial as trials are normally understood in this country. Okay. It's like what Judge Kaplan did. You know, no jury, and he's got his person in there, and they're going to convict me, even though I believe I'm totally innocent. And I will then appeal it. You know, we will contest the trial when it happens. But you know, I don't think this trial should happen. I don't think anyone in America should be prosecuted by a private law firm that has direct ties to a corporation against whom the defendant has been litigating on the civil side for years. That's just not right. So we're asking Merrick Garland to step in and just stop this case, take it back, and deal with it in a professional, disinterested way, not deal with it in the interests of Chevron, which is what Rita Glavin and the Seward and Kissel firm are doing right now. They're using the prosecutorial power of the United States government in service of Chevron, not in service of the public.
Merrick Garland, the recently confirmed Attorney General of the United States. So U.S. Department of Justice decided not to prosecute you, but the federal judge, Loretta Preska, was not willing to leave it at that. She appoints a private law firm, and the clients of this private law firm include Chevron, the very entity you had previously beaten in court. So you're getting prosecuted by a law firm that gets paid by the people who you were prosecuting. In effect, Chevron gets to bring a federal case against you. But the underlying accusation is that you were supposedly present when a bribe took place of an Ecuadorian justice official. But Chevron's star witness for that case later recanted his testimony. You've said that. The Guardian has reported that. Mainstream media outlets are saying, you know, it's not just you. He actually did recant his testimony, according to all these major mainstream media outlets. That wasn't enough to get the charges against you dismissed or overturned. The judge decided to keep on going. Now, there is one other case or one other court entity, at least one other, that's involved in this. This international tribunal in The Hague found had a finding that there was bribery involved in the 2011 Ecuador Supreme Court justice. Is that accurate? How do you explain their decision?
No, to me, a distraction. I mean, it's an irrelevant decision in this sense. That was a case brought under the U.S. Ecuador Bilateral Investment Treaty. It was a private arbitration held in secret between Chevron and Ecuador's government. We were not a party to that. We didn't participate. We weren't allowed to present evidence. And it doesn't matter because what matters is Ecuador's courts, public courts, found Chevron liable for a massive pollution. It was affirmed on appeal by the highest two courts in Ecuador, the Supreme Court and the Constitutional Court, and it's over. The people of Ecuador won. They beat Chevron. So Chevron keeps sort of doing these side things to sort of undermine that. Mm-hmm. You know, they're attacking me, locking me up. They start an arbitration against the government. And it is true that these arbitrators basically recycled, you know, Chevron's false evidence from this witness. And without hearing any evidence from the people of Ecuador or from me, you know, found consistent with Judge Kaplan. But, you know, that's not a public court. It was held in secret. We don't even have access to their briefs. It was a boondoggle. The three arbitrators were billing $1,000 an hour for 9 years. I think they each made about $25 million in fees off of that case. So it's a big irrelevancy. I mean, it's just a judgment that Chevron has against Ecuador's government that, frankly, will probably never be paid. But Chevron tries to use that to, so journalists ask me that question and we get a little bit off track. I'm just telling you,
yeah,
that case has no relevance to the real show, which is Ecuador's courts ruled in favor of the people against Chevron. And that's the judgment for $9.5 billion that will be enforced, I believe, in due course against Chevron's assets around the world.
You are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI, Pacifica Radio Network, hosted by Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney. And we are here today with Stephen Donziger, human rights lawyer.
So what's Chevron's goal in all this? Do they want to make an example of you to deter others from ever prosecuting again, or do you see something even larger?
Well, that's a good question. I think the goal, first of all, this, you know, Chevron understands better than anybody, as do I, this is about much more than Stephen Donziger. I mean, they are trying to deploy lawfare and weaponize the law, manipulate the law to destroy me as a way to send a message to other environmental lawyers, human rights activists, campaigners, that, you know, the big fossil fuel companies should not be messed with. We were very successful with this case. And this is happening to me precisely because we were successful. You know, when you win a $10 billion judgment, and by the way, it's higher now because of interest, and you represent, you know, people of color, historically marginalized indigenous peoples, that is something that just terrifies them, because there are so many communities out there around the world, including in the United States, that if they were to use our model of success, which is a model where we got significant support around the world, we raised money to be able to sustain the case for 27 years. We got some of the best litigators in the world. We married up shamans in the rainforest with, you know, litigators like Alan Lentzner in Toronto, who's the top litigator in Canada. You know, we have major donors into this case, people who have made a lot of money and really care about the environment, care about indigenous rights and justice. And putting together that group of people, all united behind the common purpose of making sure the people of Ecuador have a remedy to this awful, deliberate, systematic pollution that Texaco dumped onto ancestral lands, that's powerful. And I think what they're doing to me, I think they're angry. I think they're on a crusade. And I think they're trying to emotionally take out their frustration at having lost the case against me, because I'm here in New York. And I'm, you know, I'm a strong, resilient, you know, I have a lot of power in the sense that, you know, I speak and I can articulate a thought. And I've been involved in this for 25 plus years. And I have credibility when I talk, and they want to silence me. I think they've calculated that if they can shut me up, get me out of the case, they don't have to deal with the people of Ecuador, ever pay the judgment. And more broadly, they want to send a message to anyone even thinking about doing this kind of case that they shouldn't do it. My message is, no, you should do it, because you can do these cases. You can get financing. Our planet is in peril because of these polluters, because of this industry. This work must be done. So we're going to keep going. And yeah, I'm locked up almost 2 years in my apartment, but I'm talking to you. I give interviews. I work, you know, like normal. I mean, not quite like normal, because I can't travel, but, you know, I'm constantly in touch with lawyers, with people in Ecuador, and we're moving forward.
Excellent. You know, I think also that they also want to communicate to the people on the ground that they cannot possibly resist. So it's a matter of not only the people who've come to their aid, but it's also to say, you have to take what we're doing to you, and you don't deserve anything better.
I was going to say, I think that's exactly right. I mean, it's almost like they want to advertise. They want to use me and use the people of Ecuador to advertise their power as a way to intimidate people and demoralize people. And we, you know, let me just say this. Since I've been locked up, while my world has shrunk physically, like spiritually, the connections I've made, the support that I and my clients have gotten has expanded exponentially. I mean, 55 Nobel laureates and thousands of lawyers, you know, follow me on Twitter, by the way. You can see some of the stuff that's happening. It's quite extraordinary. I mean, there's a movement now that, whereas before this was just like a legal case. I mean, there's like a whole kind of movement behind the people of Ecuador because of this overreach, in my opinion.
It might be good to have this as a closing note. What is the current, you touched on it at the beginning, but what is the current situation in Ecuador? What is the current level of pollution and contamination that the people there are facing? What are the prospects for the future? What's the legacy of Chevron Texaco's misdeeds there?
It's the worst oil pollution on Earth. It's called the Amazon Chernobyl for a reason. I mean, 16 billion gallons were dumped and never cleaned up. There's 1,000 waste pits still there. You can see it. Like, some of these are like lakes of oil, and they run pipes out of them down into the streams and rivers, out of which people drink and eat, eat the fish. And, you know, people who live in this region and the indigenous peoples get exposed multiple times daily through the water they drink, the food they eat, the air they breathe, to cancer-causing toxins, and thousands have died. And it's almost like a slow mass murder, because, you know, it's like happens every day, but there's no spectacular, you know, event or explosion that makes you pay attention. But it is happening, and it's horrendous. So the situation in terms of the pollution is as bad, if not worse, than it's ever been. I mean, and just because Chevron left doesn't mean it's over. It's still there, and it's still causing harm, and it's still in the water and still leaking into the groundwater and the soils. And, you know, living there is almost like a death sentence. And as a result, many people have moved out. And that's why some of the indigenous peoples have been decimated, because like their culture, like they're tied to the land, the forest, and they have had to leave just to survive. They've had to leave their ancestral lands where they lived for thousands of years, just in the last 10, 15 years, you know? So it's critically important that, people pay attention to this, and that ultimately courts Canada or other countries enforce this judgment so that people can clean this up. And if that happens, a lot of lives will be saved and Chevron will be held fully accountable. And can I just say one more thing? If people want to help.
Yes, please.
A lot of people say, yeah, how can we help? We have a website. It's called freedonziger.org. One word, freedonziger, D-O-N-Z-I-G-E-R. Go to the site. You can sign up for the campaign. Give us your email. We'll send you materials on a regular basis. You can also donate to the defense fund. We need resources to deal with this monster. I need resources to keep my legal team that's defending me rolling and also pay our household expenses because I've been wiped out financially and we could use some help. But if you can't give, because I know times are really tough, go anyway to the site, freedonziger.org, and sign up and just be part of this campaign. We would really appreciate it if you could do that.
Thank you so much, Stephen, for spending some time with us. And I encourage everybody to go to that website. I think it would be great to support you. You've been listening to WBAI's Extinction Rebellion Radio with Matthew Kearney and Elise Lane, speaking with attorney Stephen Donziger, who won a landmark case against Chevron for massive pollution in Ecuador. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back next week for more Rebellious Radio.
This has been Extinction Rebellion Radio.
Activist Sharon Salam speaks out for WBAI.
We should be moving forward, collecting the funds that we need to make sure that our station is whole and that it can do its job as it has done for me in the past. When all of this stuff happened to me many, many years ago in 1989, I didn't get very many opportunities to speak out in regards to the wrong that was done to my son and the other boys in the Central Park Jogger case, as it was called at that time. Very few people stepped up. Yes, Like It Is was there, WBAI was there, and a few others. Majority of those stations that let people like myself speak and tell them what was going on the other side, those stations are gone. If we lose WBAI, where do we go to get our words out? Where do we go if you've been arrested unjustly? Where do you go if someone's taken your children unfairly? Where do you go to seek justice? We must keep this station alive. Alive. WBAI.
No justice.
This is listener-sponsored, locally controlled WBAI New York.
The WBAI's local station board is holding its next meeting on Wednesday, May 12th at 7 p.m. It's a delegate assembly meeting to discuss the proposed referendums to change the Pacifica bylaws. Since fair campaign provisions are in effect, we aren't discussing the referendum to change Pacifica's democratic governance on the air. But opinions may be expressed as part of the local station board meeting on Wednesday, May 12th at 7 p.m. The LSB meeting is open to the public and includes an opportunity for public comment. It is a remote access meeting. The fastest and easiest way to join is by using the link on the Pacifica Radio calendar and on the WBAI website at WBAI.org. You can also access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099. And enter the meeting ID 922-457-2995. That's 922-457-2995. The password is 995, like WBAI's frequency, 99.5. So it's 995-995-99. Thanks for listening, and we hope you join us at the LSB meeting, May 12th at 7 p.m. The previous program.